Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Thursday, February 19th. We've got a great show coming up for you. We've had great guests all week, huh, Jen?
Yep, we have.
And we're going to have more great guests in a few minutes. We're going to have an author calling in. And tomorrow we have another studio guest. So I've kind of gotten used to having the studio guests all week, huh?
Yeah, we've been busy.
So sometimes it's off and on, you know. One week is like mostly phone guests. Another week is studio guests. So that'll be cool. We've got some more awesome people coming up on the show.
Yep. For me, it's one week of, you know, getting camera ready and one week of rolling in my PJs.
Oh, well, you know. What can I tell you? Whatever floats your boat is what they say, right?
Yep. Well, yeah. When we got people here, I got to look good.
Got to look good. Absolutely. So what? When there's no people here, you don't have to look good?
Well, I don't have to be on camera, so I don't need makeup. I don't need to do my hair.
Okay. Well, you don't anyway. I mean, the thing is that you don't have to, you know.
Well, I like how I look when I do that, especially if in pictures that are posted on okay. the internet.
All right. Okay. Well, I can go for that. You know. Yeah. So, yeah, yesterday we had, I always forget his first name, Jonathan Holliday. And we were talking about, you know, ordinary people making extraordinary changes. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting, you know. I mean, I thought he was a cool guy. And if you guys didn't listen yesterday, you should check the show, because there's we said a lot of great stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always learn something new, you know?
Love
That's
it.
That's the thing. You never stop learning.
Nope.
Yeah. So this morning I got up. It was foggy.
Was
it foggy
where
you are,
too? I was just going to say that. Yeah, I looked out the window just now and I was like, where'd all that fog go?
Yeah.
It was very foggy. In fact, when I was driving here, Waze was telling me, fog up ahead. I was like,
really?
Well, thanks for letting me know.
I know. Waze is great, huh? I started using it, too.
Oh, yeah. It tells you everything.
Yeah. I know. I got like a little tablet for free from AT&T. So I figured I'll use that for GPS since I don't have one in my car. And I've been using Waze, and it's great, you know. People get to report what they see on the road, so you often see, like, icons of cops.
Yep. It'll tell you, like, if there's, like, a traffic light with a camera, or if there's cops, or if there's a car in the shoulder, it'll tell you everything.
Right. And car jams, traffic jams, yep. and this kind of stuff.
The one thing it doesn't do, which is very frustrating, is it'll take you to a street where it wants you to make a left, but there's no light.
Really?
So you have to, like, battle traffic to make that left.
Oh, okay.
But I think it should.
So you would avoid that?
I would totally avoid that at all costs. I would rather go to streets where there are lights or easier turns to make.
I see. Even if you go to a new place, though, I mean, if you didn't know the area.
Well, no, I would want Waze to tell me where to go.
Right.
Yeah.
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 I know. And by the way, I proudly say it was an Israeli company that developed that.
It is.
Yeah. There's actually, there's so many startups in Israel. It's amazing, you know. They're saying that after the United States, Israel's got the most companies on the NASDAQ, or tech companies or something like that. But it's amazing to me how much is going on there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even things like Intel chips and Microsoft Windows all get developed there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And they sure like to tell you when you go there.
Yeah.
I remember on my tour, it was
They're
like...
proud. It's a small country.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. They invented, like, the air that we breathe. Like... It was so funny because by the end of the trip, we were just like, oh, Israeli invented.
Yeah. So you guys invented everything pretty much, right? Yeah.
Now I just believe it. I'm like, well, that must have been built in Israel.
I know. But it's a reality. You know, I mean, disproportionately, I think Jewish people are pretty prominent, you know, Nobel Prizes, things like that, you know. So what are you going to say? You know, maybe that's why they don't like us. because we're small people and a small bunch of people doing extraordinary things. So
I think it's a good work ethic. I mean, also other groups could probably. I don't usually like to like talk about groups as, you know, generalizing them, but I would say that people that work hard usually see results.
Okay, yeah, usually is the key word here.
Right.
It doesn't always work.
No, I mean, and it also varies in, like, you know, perspective of, like, how great the results are and how much success somebody has. But it's all relative. But I think really just, you know, a good work ethic could get you a long way. Some people resolve to be lazy, and then they blame others for their successes and their failures.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of weird, you know, when you work in other countries and stuff. I mean, when I worked in Israel, it's like a whole different culture there as far as people. You know, they're like argue loudly and shout in the office and everything's okay, you know.
Yeah.
So it's funny. But yeah, and then when I was in South Africa, everybody's so laid back there. You know, I worked for a guy that he had a computer graphics company, and I was doing animation and stuff at the time. So we worked for him. He had a huge house. So we worked at his house. He had a pool. I mean, we would, like, take breaks, play soccer, you know, get high, things like that.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
During the day. And you don't see that.
No.
So, yeah, it's a lot more laid back.
I would like that.
Yeah, I know. We had a lot of fun there. I would have stayed, you know, but I really missed my kids, so I came back. I lived in Israel for a year and then in South Africa for a year in my 30s. And because I sort of tried to get away from here. I wasn't happy here. I had just gotten divorced. You know, the kids went with their mom and I was totally devastated. So I had to leave here for a while. And so I worked in Israel for a year and it was really weird, you know. Because when I left there, I was 16. I'd never really worked there in an adult environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty interesting. And then, you know, I moved to South Africa. I met this girl and my cousin lived there and they all said, come down. And I did. And I loved it. You know, it was great. Although there's a lot of crime and everything. But I figured since I don't have my family here, I'm okay. You know, there's nobody to worry about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would like constantly be in tears about my kids. I'd have their pictures on the wall and all that stuff. And every time I'd call them, like every week, you know. And they were young, you know. They were like 6 and 3.
Oh, wow. That's very young.
Yeah. You know, they didn't understand really why I'm not there.
Do they remember that at all?
Yeah.
They do?
Yeah. At least my older my daughter knows that. She's the older one. And yeah, she reminds me sometimes, why did you leave us and all this stuff. But you know, I think a lot of stuff was put into her head by her mom.
I'm sure.
But at the same time, because things like this, I mean, you just kind of let go, because as little as they understood, when I came back, I said, I'm never leaving again.
Yeah.
And I never have.
That's good.
Yeah. But then they don't really give a shit. They each have their own lives and that's it. I mean, my son's up north. If I don't text him or call him, I don't hear from him. You know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's not like we're not close. He comes down here and we're close, but still I don't hear much from him because he's very involved with his friends right now.
Right. Well, that's, girls. You know, I'm sure you are too at some point.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I went to school in Miami and my parents lived in Miami and I barely went home and I barely, you know, I would talk to them on the phone and stuff, but I was so involved in school and studying and whatever I was doing, sorority stuff, and I was also in theater. So it was like, there was just no time to be like, oh, family.
Yeah, and it's true, and it's also the time you flee the nest, and then, you know, you want to sort of like be independent by yourself, and you don't think about your parents that much.
It's an adjustment. Age. Also, you take it for granted when you're that, like, in that part of your life, because you're like, well, my parents are going to be there.
Right.
I'll call them in like a week.
Right, exactly. Or that's if you think about your parents.
Right. You know, I mean, so my aunt called me on, I think, Sunday, and I still haven't called her back. I've put it in my calendar to call her every single day.
Really?
But I like want to be in a place where I can sit and talk to her and catch up, and I'm not listening to Waze direct me around town and like coming and going. So it's taken me now 4 days to call her back.
Yeah.
And it's not because I don't want to. I'm going to. It's just I have to find time.
I know. I sometimes have that with my parents too, because you do want to find a quiet time to talk, you know.
Yeah.
Because we're so accustomed to talking anywhere, you know, in the car and all that, but it's not conducive to a good conversation.
No, I can't stand it. I'd rather have no conversation than a poor conversation.
Right, exactly. That's how I feel about it. And people don't realize that, you know, so they start having like the whole conversation on the cell phone while they're walking in the street and talking loud so everybody can hear. I mean, what is that?
You know? Also, the worst is when somebody calls you while they're like in line picking up food.
Yeah.
And then they're talking to the person that they're ordering the food from and you. And you're like, who are you talking to?
Yeah.
It's so confusing. It's like, just call it another time.
I know. Yeah. So, let's see, a lot of stuff going on. I wanted to, yesterday I'm like, I'm standing outside my car calling on the phone before I get in the car. So I left my mug, my coffee mug, like right where the windshield wipers are, mm-hmm. you know, because I kind of let it sit. I didn't want to put it on the hood and stuff. So I got in the car and I'm starting to drive and suddenly I'm hearing like this bang thing and I'm like looking at my mirror and I see this like can or something. I thought I hit a can or something. But when I finally get home, I said, something's missing here. And I realized I missed my mug.
Aww.
So apparently I drove away with it on the window, on the windshield.
Oh,
and
man.
It just flew off, you know. So
that's why you don't have it today.
That's why I don't have coffee today, and I'm feeling a little off.
You know what? I didn't have coffee today either, and I thought about stopping and getting some, but I was like, I cannot be late, so I'm going to sacrifice my energy for being on time.
Yeah. Your eyes are a little closed.
I'm tired. I want coffee.
I know. I already had my coffee, but usually I get a second one to come here.
Sam, why isn't there any coffee here?
I know. Well, you know, it's considerations you have to think about.
I guess.
You know, we get so many people coming in through here. Just the water alone cost me a fortune.
True.
You know?
True.
I mean, there's like, you know, hundreds of, well, yeah, easily more than 100 people go through this place every week.
Yeah.
Easily.
It's quite clean for having all those people come and go through here.
I know. We really take care of the place. Because I like neat, clean places, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why everybody that comes here, they love it because there's a good vibe to it, you know.
Yeah.
And that's very important, you know. But yeah, I figured forget about coffee now, you know. Let people bring their own coffee. You know, it's not like it's just employees, you know. I mean,
right, it's
guests,
too. A lot
of people come through here and stuff.
I need to get some coffee after the show, that's for sure.
Well, there's a Starbucks up the street.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. So you can go and get that. Yeah, I like my espresso in the morning and in the evening with my new machine. I love it.
You have it two times a day?
Yeah, sometimes three, actually.
Oh,
if I take a nap, when I get up, I need some coffee. Then I'll drink it like at midnight or something, you know.
Midnight?
Yeah, do you believe it? And I'm still able to go to sleep, but it does keep me awake, I think. I don't know. Yeah.
I go to sleep by like 11.
Yeah, that's cool. You see, I wish I could. Every evening I go, okay, I'll go to bed by 12. I've got to. Nah, 2:30.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
I
take melatonin every night and go to sleep.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So what does that do? It helps you sleep? Or
something? Oh, yeah.
Really?
Makes you fall asleep. Makes you stay asleep.
Really?
It's like a vitamin. It's great.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't have trouble falling asleep at all. It's just get myself off the computer in the evening, you know, because, I mean, that's the easiest time for me to work. So I just get, you know, and then let's say so I'm sitting there and I'm going, okay, 1 o'clock, I'm going to bed. And then I'm starting on something else and it keeps me sitting there for another couple hours.
Yikes.
And I'm a person that really focuses on what I'm doing, you know, so I don't even notice the time flying, you know. Yeah. So there goes my coffee mug. I have to buy a new one now. But that's okay. Maybe I'll buy a new one that's better for like cappuccino that preserves the foam and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe it works out for the best. Because I was just making for work. I was making instant coffee and I can't drink that anymore after I drink the espresso.
Yeah. Now you have a finer taste in coffee.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, it's much stronger in the espresso machine. So then you get something else and it's light, you know.
Yeah.
Too weak. All right. Well, here's our guest. So let's go ahead and get that. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Bill Ratner calling.
Hi, Bill. Good morning. Thank you for calling in. How are you?
Hi, good Sam, thanks.
Where are you calling us from this morning, Bill?
I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Oh, cool. So you're enjoying the same beautiful weather that we are.
Yeah, so, you know, it was so cold last night, I had to put a cardigan sweater on. It was brutal.
Yeah. I know. I was just telling Jen before the show, there's like 20 degrees in New York right now.
I know. It's terrible. I have a daughter who's in college in Massachusetts, and she's tired of it.
Yeah, I don't know how people deal with that. You know, it's amazing to me.
Yeah.
So, Bill, you wrote the book Parenting for the Digital Age. And the subtitle is The Truth Behind Media's Effect on Children and What to Do About It. And I thought this is very relevant. I'm concerned. My kids are grown, but, you know, we have little kids in the family.
Sure.
And you see kids all the time, and they're glued to the telephones and to the tablets. It used to be television. Now it's they take it with them. So this is truly, I think, an issue and a problem in the country, probably in the world. And you wrote a book to address that. Give us a little bit of background. How did you come to write this book in the first place?
Well, I've made my living for the last 35 years as a voiceover guy, a cartoon voice and trailer voice for movies and so on. And I'm the voice of Flint on the cartoon G.I. Joe, which was syndicated for years. And,
really? Wow.
And I realized at the time that the show rolled out in the 80s, Hasbro Toy Corporation created the biggest rollout of toys at the same time as the cartoon show. Well, this made perfect sense. But also at the same time, the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, deregulated children's TV rules for the first time since the creation of the FCC in the 30s. And what it meant was in the early 80s, 37 years ago, we created for the first time a generation of child consumers. And I thought, oops, I'm part of the problem. And I started having children, and they were fascinated with what DVDs and VHS tapes I'd bring home of projects I was involved in, and suddenly they were watching uncontrolled. And so my wife and I installed a secret switch in the basement of our house, and were able to turn off the entertainment center, but that didn't solve the problem. And so I created a program in the L.A. schools called TV Cartoon Scandals, Media Awareness for Children, and later started thinking about this book, which is really intended for families who have kids who they adore, but they find they're losing their child, who are more interested in their digital devices than they are in talking to their parents.
Right.
And it's a problem because, you know, these fabulous iPhones and pads don't come with instruction manuals that tell parents, hey, this is how you can control the use of this device. This is how you can keep your child and keep a close family relationship and then enjoy the benefits of the devices. Steve Jobs of Apple Computer was interviewed soon before he died and was told by the writer from the New York Times, gee, Mr. Jobs, your house must be an amazing place for your kids. Jobs had a large family of children and young kids, and he said, no, quite the opposite. We banned digital equipment. And the journalist was totally perplexed. He said, well, you invented it. And he said, well, I know what it can do inside a home. I know what it does to a family.
Wow.
And so this guy went on to interview a bunch of other CEOs of software and hardware companies that sell to children and adults. And they all said the same thing. More than any other kind of family, these people are more wary. The very creators of these addictive devices are more wary of them for their children than anyone. And I found this very, very interesting. And so if there are parents listening who are saying, gee, I have teenagers or preteens and I don't know what to do, I interviewed a bunch of parents and told a bunch of fun stories for everything from Barbie. There's a huge Barbie chapter and strange stories about that doll and where she's going digitally and story of G.I. Joe and so on. So that's really why I did it.
That's amazing, you know, because You know, a lot of this stuff is happening, and I'm constantly concerned about it as well. You know, and I'm a person of gadgets and technology and stuff, but I've seen my kids discover the phones. They were actually on the cusp of when the iPhones and stuff started coming out. So,
right.
But, you know, it does change their behavior, you know, and like I was discussing this about my son. He's 21, and he always prefers to text over calling, you know, and I think that's part of the gadget culture that we have that sort of like isolates people from each other.
Right. Do you remember when the BlackBerry came out, way before the iPhone, before smartphones? The BlackBerry was a pretty amazing device. And they began calling it the CrackBerry because executives, lawyers, doctors, publishers, agents, people who used the BlackBerry got so addicted. I mean, these are highly educated individuals that I've read stories of executives going off in their bathrooms at night, leaving the dinner table so they could check their email on their CrackBerrys.
Wow.
And calling it the CrackBerry because it's so highly addictive.
Right,
years ago, it seems as though we've sort of forgotten. We have short memories. You know, we pay heed and tribute to great things and terrible things that happen, and we forget about them and move on and need to learn our lessons all over again. And families especially are learning lessons the hard way. Kids who are going to the top colleges in America are scoring lower since the digital devices, the iPhones, came out. Really? Scoring lower in entrance exams, and scoring lower. Big notes on my iPad. Well, what they're finding, what monitors and TAs are finding in classrooms, and again, these are top universities.
Yeah,
we're not talking about community colleges. We're talking about the highest achievers, young people in America. What TAs and monitors are finding in classrooms is that they're not doing, they're not taking notes. They're checking Instagram.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, and because it's such a highly addictive. I fall prey to the same thing. When this book came out in November, I was back east on a book tour, and my wife kept saying, "Stop checking your stupid iPhone. You're doing exactly what you're warning people against."
Right.
And I said, "Honey, honey, let me alone. This is business. This is business." But I realized that within like 72 hours, I had developed exactly the same impulses that a 16-year-old develops.
Right.
Where you think you feel a buzz on your leg, and you pull out your phone. It's another text. There's a technical term for that. Neurologists have developed a term for it. I can't remember what it is. Phantom vibration syndrome.
Oh, my goodness.
Phantom vibration syndrome is the feeling that you have in your pocket that you're getting a text or an email.
That's true. I get that sometimes, you know.
And you reach for it, and it's not happening.
Yeah.
But your body, your nervous system wants it, expects it, needs it to happen.
Wow.
It's very weird.
It is weird. You know, when I was a kid, we used to look forward to mail. You know, we'd run to the mailbox, see if we got any letter or package or something. Today, we just want to see if we get the text. You know, it's the same thing.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is about gaming. And here I'm part of the problem. And I'm the voice of Donatello Dina on Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3.
Really? Wow. And, you do have an awesome voice, I got to tell you. You know?
Well, it's fun. You know, it's a fun career to have, and every day's different and so on. And but I get myself into situations where I'm wondering, okay, so I'm doing this voice on a game that's made over $1 billion in gross profits.
Wow.
What's the deal with kids and gaming? Because I have daughters, they weren't really interested in gaming, and I've never played these games. I go on the websites to look at what the characters look like, but I don't actually play them.
Yeah.
You know, they're brilliantly, brilliantly done. They're done like major motion pictures. I think Grand Theft Auto V cost something like $200 million to make and took 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And it's like a huge tentpole motion picture like you know, Transformers or something.
Right.
And in the first 3 days of release of Grand Theft Auto V, a very popular game where kids can steal cars and beat people up and so on, they grossed $1 billion in the first 3 days of its release.
Wow.
A billion.
Yeah.
And so my question is, okay, so is there anything wrong with gaming? I mean, a lot of adults do it, and Right. You know, it seems fun. And there used to be that myth about, well, if you really can work a joystick, it's good for eye-hand coordination. Right. The truth is, I asked an executive from Hasbro. I said, gee, all these big game companies, Electronic Arts and Rockstar Games, must be making a ton of auxiliary money selling action figures that go with the games.
Right.
And this guy who knows the business very well said, no, not at all. It's very difficult for toy makers these days. It used to be that when it was a television show like G.I. Joe or Transformers, the toy makers made billions.
Right.
But today, kids don't need toys because they're gaming 24/7.
Right.
Wow, that's
interesting. And, you know, there are all kinds of studies of everything from G.I. Joes to Barbie dolls to sticks in the mud as to the benefits of play on the part of children.
Right.
You know, go out in the backyard and suddenly they pick up a stone and a rock and you know, and they're making funny sounds with stalks of grass. And this is you know, traditional eons of time of children's play. They're learning how to sort of manipulate things and each other and have fun and make stuff up. And prepares them for real life, no matter what, whether they're playing Barbie doll or whatever they're doing.
Right.
But if they're sitting in front of a game console 24/7, that's not happening.
Right.
They're in a very passive role with cool pictures designed by 28-year-old guys somewhere in Silicon Valley who nobody knows who they are and what they think and what their sort of moral or ethical position in life is. So I find that a little scary too.
Yeah, definitely. We're talking to Bill Ratner. The book is Parenting for the Digital Age. I wanted to ask you also, you're addressing advertising to kids. Let's talk a little bit about that, because obviously, you know, we already know it's nothing new that advertisers know that if they get the kid wanting what they're selling, the kid will talk the parent into getting it for them. So tell us a little bit about how advertising to children harms them.
Well, I was a lucky kid. My dad was an advertising guy. He was editor-in-chief of Better Homes and Gardens magazine, and then he went on to become executive vice president of ad agencies and General Mills and so on. So I learned very early from my dad, you know, take your son to work day type of thing. and he was interested in talking to me about it and sort of, you know, dispelling the myths about it. I don't think that people, adults or kids or families, realize what's behind advertising to children. What's behind it is a multi-billion-dollar industry and some of the brightest, most highly educated, highly trained manipulators, media experts in the world. When Barbie first came out, and this is a while ago, but this is just a classic advertising story, Barbie didn't do well in the first year because she looked like a sexy teenager, and parents were scared of that doll. They didn't want their little girls having a sexy teenager. They wanted them to have a baby doll, which is what most dolls look like.
Right.
Well, she hired a man named Ernst Dichter, who was a trained psychoanalyst, Freudian-trained psychoanalyst, who realized he could make more money consulting for Madison Avenue and television commercials. Mm. And he completely reformatted the advertising message of Barbie. And there's a whole chapter in my book on it. And became one of the wealthiest advertising consultants in America. He was an immigrant from Austria. And he gave up his practice of trying to heal people and decided to tell advertisers how to make commercials that will make children watch, because he understood the psychology of need and excitement and want, and that's what's behind it. And so this is over 50 years ago. So the American advertising business has had decades and decades and decades of brilliant testing models and research to figure out how to target children, because when you target children, that's the easiest way to get a parent to buy a toy.
Yeah.
And I call it satanically brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it is brilliant. I mean, there's no other nation on earth that does it as well as this country.
Right.
But there's no other nation on earth where children are as fat, eating as much junk food advertised on television and on the web, buying as many unneeded clothes and games and devices, right, and so on. And I mean, I'm not a Luddite. I live in a city. I drive a late model car. I have digital devices. I want my daughters to enjoy life and travel and dress well and so on. So I'm not a freak. But I look at what's under the hood. If you lift the hood on children's media and children's advertising, what you find is a highly well-designed war room, yeah, that is designed to do whatever it can to win the hearts and minds and pocketbooks of American families.
Yeah, yeah. I know, and that's a problem, you know, being a such a commercial society, you know, where we buy things, and I think also the our generation of parents, we sort of like want to give our kids everything that we didn't have, and they've grown up with high expectations, I think. And
I think, I mean, you know, we all have pleasant memories. I have very pleasant memories of looking back in the 50s and 60s and the toys that I had and some of them that I saved and the funny TV shows I used to watch. I'll look at that stuff on YouTube and I'll have just a rush of nostalgia. And
right,
we all have warm feelings for the sort of commercial things that we enjoyed as children. And I don't see it as inherently evil. I just see a nation full of young families really blind to what's behind the curtain. You know, somebody knocks on your door, you want to know who's there. Who's there? Why are you here?
Yeah.
Are you a friend or foe? But if someone comes on a television commercial or comes on, you know, a pop-up ad on your desktop or on your iPhone, we click on it and we listen, yeah, and so do children. And it's just sort of blind as this part of the landscape. Right. But children and adults are bombarded with thousands of media messages every day.
Yeah.
And what does it do? It sort of creates an automatic response of, well, I do need a new Chanel purse. Oh, oops, it's $3,000. Hmm. Well, I could spend $1,000. Oh, it'd be so cool. How about a fake? I'll buy a fake.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and the thing is also, I think, you know, kids being on computers and having all these devices, they get to see stuff we've never seen as kids, you know. They grow up too fast, you know, including pornography and violence and things like that, you know, and I just can't see how that would not hurt our children.
You know, there's an interesting, there are a lot of gender studies and sex education people in colleges who are beginning to wonder about the current generation of males coming up, boys from 12 to 20, who all of whom have grown up on, despite their parents' greatest efforts, all of whom have grown up on internet pornography.
Right.
I mean, if that had been around when I was 12 years old, would I have watched it? You bet.
Yeah, you would, yeah.
And it's easy, and easy peasy. I mean, kids are caught every day in school libraries looking at pornography.
Wow.
And of course, yes, you know, there's schools and school systems that put filters and internet filters and so on, but most families in their homes don't. And either don't know how or haven't bought the software, and even if they do, it's easily hackable and kid can go next door. And right. So what sex educators and gender studies people are wondering is, what is an entire generation of boys, American boys, what are their expectations going to be of their girlfriends?
Right.
If what they've been looking at since age 12 is professional sex workers,
right,
having sex on the internet, and, you know, I mean, these are sex athletes. This is not reality. These are
actors.
Yeah. They're entertainers.
Right.
But that's not the average person is sort of gawky and dorky and, you know, affectionate and likes to hug and et cetera, et cetera. And people can have, you know, people since time immemorial have many people have had lovely sex lives being awkward, overweight human beings who meet someone who looks like them and they have a lovely love life,
right,
like me. And but that's a real question, is to if an entire generation of males is looking at potential girlfriends and has looked at virtually nothing, has seen virtually nothing but porn stars as role models, what's that going to produce? What's it going to be like for the generation of girls, you know, age say 16 to 22 who are at college, and they're dating somebody who seems like a cool guy, and he seems responsible, and he's polite, and all of a sudden they get in the bedroom, and his expectations are that she should be a sexual athlete like what he's been watching on the internet for 15 years.
That's true, yeah.
I think they're going to need a little help, a little counseling.
Yeah.
Some sort.
I know, and to understand this just doesn't happen, you know, where women just attack men and all this stuff. And I think they grow up, you know, believing all that stuff. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and I mean, it's you know, this is where I'm getting off on a tangent here, but a friend of mine just got hired. She runs a storytelling show up in San Francisco, personal storytelling, which is very popular these days. And folks go to nightclubs, and instead of seeing a rock band, they see personal, and people get up telling interesting, sometimes embarrassing, sometimes funny, sometimes not, personal stories, like The Moth, themoth.org. It's a wonderful, wonderful organization that has storytelling, usually younger people in their 20s and 30s. Uh-huh. And she got contacted by Princeton University in New Jersey, arguably one of the great Ivy League bastions of intellectuality and academic excellence, and said, would you bring some of your storytellers to Princeton Sex Week? And she says, what is Princeton Sex Week? They said, well, we've decided with the student union and the faculty to create Sex Week in order to bring students, to get students in, everything from comedians to sexologists to women talking about date rape, and gay people talking about issues of tolerance on campus. And so, you know, some universities are beginning to address all these issues. And, I mean, there are good things on the Internet as well. You know, there's certainly a lot of education. I use the Internet every day. Google is the most amazing tool ever invented for someone who wants information and data. So, I'm staring at my brand new, you know, Mac Plus. And I don't put this stuff down at all.
Right.
But it just depends on what you do with it. If you're a parent and you're watching your kid, what are they looking at?
Yeah.
And are you talking to your kid? Are you asking them, as opposed to telling them, you better not be watching that dirty stuff?
Right.
What are you watching, sweetie? What do you think of it?
Yeah.
What's the deal? What do you think? What do you think? What are your expectations of girls when you get to college?
Right.
And that's a lot of what's in my book.
Right. Great. So you have solutions and everything in the book too, which I saw, which is great. You know, it's not enough to bring up the problem, but you have solutions, which I think we should leave to the readers to find out. I'm sure it's quite involved as far as, you know, monitoring your kids. And, you know, you have to be involved, I think. You can't just let the computer babysit your kids. You know, it's people used to do that with TV. They still do. But TV never even came close to the stuff you can find on the Internet.
Right, exactly.
You know?
The biggest thing is, it's not as difficult as parents would think. It starts with a conversation, and a conversation like, hey, sweetie, you know, we need to get homework done, and we're going to impose some rules about the phone and web surfing and gaming and stuff. What do you think they ought to be?
Right.
And the children are very aware, more aware than we are of all of this stuff, and they can come up with brilliant things. Well, maybe I shouldn't have my phone between, I don't know, 8 p.m. and 6 in the morning, and you know, and so dad takes it and puts it in the sock drawer.
Right.
Well, what about the computer? Maybe we should move the computer out into the family room.
Right, exactly.
And maybe the computer, you know, maybe we should charge all the phones in the kitchen so that if you get a call, you can take it in your room, you bring it back and plug it in.
Right.
I mean, there's simple things that parents can work out with their kids, and I interviewed a bunch of friends that were in our babysitting co-op and strangers who had great ideas on simple things that you can do. And, you know, some PTA groups talk about this. I don't know, probably some church groups that talk about this. And if not, maybe you should go to your church or your PTA group and say, hey, let's have an evening or let's have a morning meeting in which we discuss use of digital devices in the home with children. And so it gives parents an opportunity to be creative because they're not going to be told by the industry.
Right.
It's not like buying a fire extinguisher, which everybody knows you don't fire off in the house unless there's a fire. You show your kids how to use it, and they say, this is if there's a fire on the stove or an electric fire, this is what you do. But clearly we don't play with it, and everybody knows the rules.
Right.
And, you know, it comes with instructions, and you can go on the web, and everybody's very clear about it. But we're not clear about digital devices.
Right.
And what overuse and unmonitored use, how much time it can waste in a child's life until he's all grown up and gone.
That's true. And how much it's going to affect his personality, his character, his values. There's definitely a lot to talk about this, and I'm glad you came out with this book. The book is Parenting for the Digital Age. Parenting for the Digital Age, The Truth Behind Media's Effect on Children and What to Do About It. And Bill Ratner, very enlightening this morning. You know, I really appreciate you calling in.
Great,
I felt it was very relevant, and I think it's an urgent issue that we have to address.
Well, I appreciate it. I was on your website yesterday, and you guys have a great show, you and Jen, and it was fun to listen to, and I'm honored to be on your show.
Thank you very much, Bill. All the best to you. Do you have a website where people can find
it? I do. It's BillRatner.com, R-A-T-N-E-R, BillRatner.com, and you can, there are links to the book and links to videos about the book and TV shows that I've done and fun, lots of fun stuff.
Wonderful.
Great.
Congratulations on the book. I know it's a good feeling to finally have it published.
Thanks,
and, Sam. And they say here you were on the hot new release on Amazon number one. That's not a bad thing at all. So
no.
On the second week. So
Amazon is like the giant computer in the sky. I don't know if it's going to destroy us or it's going to become a movie studio, if it's going to keep selling us books. I certainly hope so.
It definitely disrupted our lives, that's for sure. You know,
yeah, I mean, quite so. Yeah.
Bill, thank you so much.
Great, and Sam.
Is there anything with voiceovers we can hear from you recent?
Well, I'm on the eighth season on the Smithsonian Channel of Air Disasters. Air Disasters.
Whoa.
And Discovery ID has some fun crime shows that I narrate. One is called I Almost Got Away With It. And another one is called Behind Mansion Walls.
Wow.
And
so sounds good.
Ryan Gosling has directed his first movie, and I'm on the TV campaign. It's called Lost River. It looks very interesting, very murky and mysterious.
Oh, wow.
So there's a bunch of stuff out there.
My
name is on some of the better phone booths around town, but the problem is there are fewer and fewer phone booths.
So. Yeah. Where are the phone booths? Yeah.
I have a question for you, Bill. For anybody that would like to get into voiceovers, you know, obviously we live in LA, so we have access to it. What would you recommend that they do to get a career in voiceovers?
No matter where you are, I tell friends who are interested in voiceovers to just simply Google voiceover, one word, voiceover classes, and the name of your town. If you're in Austin, Texas, voiceover classes, Austin, Texas. If you're in Las Vegas, voiceover classes, Las Vegas. And you get lots and lots of results. It'll take you just a couple of minutes. And there are terrific classes out there. They don't really teach it much in college. Most of the classes that I took when I was in my early 30s here in Los Angeles were taught by radio announcers, TV announcers, voiceover performers, advertising agency producers, casting people. They're not as nerve-wracking as acting classes are. Voice acting is more, there's not as much on the line. You're not being judged as to what you look like, what you wear, what your hair looks like, what your belly looks like. You're just simply being judged on what you can do with your voice. And I did workshops for 6 years, and I teach now at the Screen Actors Guild Foundation as a volunteer, and it's a fun thing to do. Lots of actors come in and take these classes, but that's what I would do is Google voiceover classes and put in the name of your town where you are.
Right, and there I believe you make connections there and then, you know, get into the industry and get employed.
Yeah, and also people who are interested can take, lots of people are doing it by Skype. There are lots of teachers in New York and Chicago and L.A. and Atlanta and Houston that teach voiceovers by Skype. And Skype, of course, is free, and you can go on a website called voiceoverresourceguide.com and click on either the Los Angeles or New York portal and click on classes and call people, email them, and say, "Hey, I'm in Butte, Montana. I'm interested in voiceovers. Can we talk on Skype?"
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Bill, thank you so much for spending the time with us this morning again.
Great job.
Congratulations on the book. Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
And
appreciate
all the
it.
Best to you. Continued success in your career.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Well, interesting guest. I mean, we planned 15 minutes. It was 30.
Yeah, very
so
interesting.
So that's very cool.
This and reminds me of the movie that came out recently called Men, Women, and Children. I think it was a Jason Reitman movie, and it was about how, like, now kids have these phones that are attached to their hands, and all they do is text, and, like, what actually happens over text. Like, I mean, people, you know, there's, like, flirting over texting now, and
right.
there's bullying over texting now, and sending pictures even, and Snapchat, and all these things that kids have access to now that are harmful.
Right.
Or helpful. I mean, it depends on how you use it, if you use it for good or evil. But
well, that's the thing, is that what it does is empower. And when you empower kids that don't know how to use the power,
right,
it could be dangerous, you
yep.
know, and that's the problem.
I think when I have children, I will outlaw selfies. There will be yeah. no selfies.
No selfies.
No.
By then, it's going to be other things,
right.
I'm sure.
Well, I'm making a list. I'm
It'll
starting now.
Holograms and stuff.
Right. It will be something different. There won't be an Instagram. There will be something else.
Right. Wow. Well, yeah, the problems we have in the digital age, man. Just 10 years ago, we didn't even think about these things.
No, I mean, my biggest issue with the digital age is that we are too connected because nobody's present. So I'll have movie night or TV night with friends who are on their phones the whole time.
Wow.
And they're like, well, I'm listening. I'm like, well, isn't the point to be watching?
Right, exactly. Put
it's not
your
like
phone
we're,
away.
Right, we're not listening to the radio. We're watching content.
Right.
So... But, you know, everyone's multitasking. We're like expert multitaskers, yet we are not because we can't do that many things at once. Our brain is not made for that.
Right.
So I feel like most of your life, like, ends up being forgotten or missed. And then you have to say, like, what? Huh? What did I miss?
Right.
Let's rewind.
It's like the people that are too busy taking pictures of their trip rather than just to enjoy
right.
the trip.
Exactly.
You know? So, yeah, I mean, it does happen quite a bit. But... You know, I don't understand it. I just know that... Well, I do understand. I mean, I know exactly what's going on, but there's got to be some kind of control, you know, for adults as well, you know, and that's
Absolutely.
What we were talking about. It's not just children.
No, my mom only speaks to me via text and Facebook.
Right. That's what you said. Yeah.
yeah.
God.
I don't remember what her voice sounds like. I'm kidding, obviously, but it's not yeah. that far off from the truth.
Right. And you know what phones do also, and I do that sometimes too, it shields you from other people. So like if you're in the elevator or something and you feel awkward, you pull out your phone.
Right. You don't you know? Have to actually connect with other people.
Exactly. And you look like you're busy.
Right.
And... You know, I mean, sometimes it's tempting to do it. When I was at the Great Love Debate this past weekend, one thing I noticed is nobody pulled out their phones. It was almost like an agreed upon thing where we're not going to get on the phones while we're here.
That's great.
Yeah. And that's the way it should be. You know, people should just pocket their phones, keep it in your purse, whatever. And just, yeah, just use it for what it's meant to be, you know,
mm-hmm.
a way to communicate, not to shield you from other people,
right.
make you look busy or something.
Actually, know? That's something my yoga teacher said one day in class. She said to make eye contact with everyone during the day. So
yeah.
anybody you see, homeless person, stranger, doesn't matter, make eye contact. Connect right. with individuals that you see because it's such a thing we forget to do.
Right.
We're literally like the loneliest people now because, or we're not, because I, truthfully, I can tell you I'm never lonely because I know that there's 17 friends on deck in my phone at any given time.
Right.
So I can either talk to them, text them, call them, Instagram with them, tweet at them. I'm never alone, which is nice.
Yeah.
But in real life, as we say, IRL, I'm like in my car alone, not making eye contact with anybody around me.
Right.
And it's like these people aren't there.
Right. No, well, you're not the only one guilty of that.
No, I just wish that as a group of humans, we would make a more conscious effort to still be human.
Yeah, I think so. We have to remember that and work hard at it. You know, like we work hard at relationships. I think we need to work hard on really controlling our use of technology.
Yes, we need interpersonal skills.
Yeah, we really do. Okay, well, time's up. I just wanted to bring up, did you see the picture of Selena Gomez topless on the cover of a magazine? And my only thing is, she looks 14.
I don't know. They made her look younger than she is. Really? I don't know why they made her look so young.
Yeah, because she's 22, but I think she just looks that way. I mean, look at her face, you know?
No, well, she looks like a baby. Yeah, she does happen to look very youthful. I mean, 22 is very youthful anyway, but they curled her hair, and she looks like she's in high school.
I know. It's she's like not. She almost went for that look, and it almost feels wrong to look at it.
I don't really get it.
She seems too young, and she's 22 years old.
Yeah, I don't like the hairstyle anyway, or the shorts. The whole thing to me is wrong.
Yeah.
But the article is interesting.
Is it really? Did you read it?
I've heard like bits and pieces of it on the news about like her talking about her issues with celebrity and also having her relationship with Justin Bieber.
Justin Bieber and all that, yeah.
Yeah, and what she's learned from everything. And she basically says becoming famous is like an adjustment process. It doesn't just feel natural to be in the public eye.
Oh, yeah.
It's uncomfortable. Like, there were times where she would be so depressed staying at home because she wouldn't want to go out and be photographed.
Right.
So she would just easily send somebody out. And by then she realized, I've been home for a month.
Right. You know, and that's the thing. That's the reason I think a lot of celebrities end up screwed up, you know, because people are not meant to know how to handle fame like this. You know, I mean, it's like you have to learn it.
Right. I mean, unless you're born into a family that's already famous and you're raised in a certain way, like the Beckham children, for instance, they're front row at every Fashion Week show this week.
Right.
And they've been photographed since they were born.
Right.
So I can't imagine as they grow up, they're going to have any issue being photographed. Their lives are already very public.
That's true. All right. Well, we're totally out of time, folks. We're running over. Thank you so much for listening. Jen, thank you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow's Friday, so we'll see you then.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.